Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another On the Time Lash Extra. I'm Ben.
I'm Mark. Hello.
And we are we're talking about the girl who died and the woman who lived.
Indeed, indeed.
But before that, I mean, let's talk about the big news. So we're recording this on Monday and 10 a.m. this morning. Well, over to you, Mark, as our big Finnish correspondent.
Well, 10 a.m. this morning. I did wonder last night when they announced it was going to be 10 a.m. I was like, well, that's that confirmed then. At 10 a.m. this morning, it was announced that the 10th Doctor and Donna will be back in a new series of adventures for Big Finish, which is great news, I think.
Another hashtag big announcement, and this is probably more exciting than the unveiling of Class a couple of
weeks ago. Yes, I would say so. No disrespect to Class, as we discussed in the last episode. But yeah, really good. Three, I would assume, hour-long episodes. Because the thing is, there was that period where Big Finish kind of tried to retroactively format Doctor Who stories with classic Doctors into like a new series time frame. So would be like sort of like two-parters where they were like 45 minutes and it didn't really work that well. Mm-hmm. People were kind of wanting that kind of four-part structure for your classic Doctors. So the McGann audios now that they've got the sort of box set set up, it's basically 1 hour-long episodes that sort of have an overarching story. So I assume we're going to have something similar for these 10th Doctor and Donna ones, sort of three hour-long adventures.
Yeah, and I mean, this is huge news.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like Big Finish has started to dance around the edges of the new series with your River Songs and your Jadoon versus the Sixth Doctor, but this is probably the most popular, I think it's probably fair to say the most popular modern Doctor returning to do audio with a companion,
with a much loved companion as well.
They've bagged a Doctor.
Yeah.
This is huge news.
I think it was always going to be David Tennant was going to be the first of the new Doctors to do it. It was always going to be the case because
he's got history and friendships. I imagine a lot of this has come about because of his friendships, because he was an actor with Big Finish before he was cast as the Doctor.
Yeah, and he did a lot of audios with them for, you know, not just the sort of Doctor Who audios. He did, I think he was in Dalek Empire for a while, and
yes, he was. Yeah,
some of the Unbounds as well, and the Unit series. So he's done a lot of Big Finish prior to this.
Yes.
So it was always going to be him.
My favourite, possibly tasteless character that he's done was Daft Jamie in Medicinal Purposes.
Of course, yes.
Which, check it out. I love it. It's Leslie Phillips as the... I won't say who it is in case you haven't heard it, but it's worth listening.
Yeah.
Leslie Phillips is the main bad guy in it.
It's a great audio, and it is shall we put it this way that David Tennant's role in that could only really be played by David Tennant on audio.
Yeah. listeners, do check it out. It's a lot of fun, and it dances on the right side of tastelessness.
Yes. But also as shall we call ourselves a Scottish Doctor Who podcast, even though we're kind of talking to each other via the phone in two different sides of the country.
Yeah.
You know, it's set in Edinburgh as well.
It is indeed set in Edinburgh, yeah.
A rare thing to have a Doctor Who story set in Edinburgh. But no disrespect to the current Doctors on Big Finish's roster, but, you know, David Tennant and Catherine Tate are, at the moment, incredibly successful as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So is this going to, I mean, is this going to lead to, like, a bit of an uptake in business for Big Finish? I think it will. I went a bit BBC News journalist there by asking a rhetorical question and then answering it.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think it's great news for Big Finish from a business point of view. It's great news for us Doctor Who fans who want... I mean, I know I kind of go on... If you follow me on Twitter, you'll know this, that I take exception to people that kind of live in the past where David Tennant's concerned. But do you know what? I am quite excited to hear that partnership again, especially as we are watching Series 4 at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I love them. I think they're great. And there's a really lovely video on Big Finish's YouTube channel with just like a little brief couple of questions with David Tennant and Catherine Tate. And it's just a joy because they are both clearly just best of friends. And I think that, you know, will reflect well in the audios themselves. They'll really be able to recapture that brilliant you know, doctor companion relationship.
Yeah. You know, congratulations, Big Finish. Yeah, you're right. I think there's going to be a lot more interest in what Big Finish do. I mean, it's practically canon now. I mean, it's got the Doctor all seal of approval. Will Eccleston come back and do some? No, probably not.
Will Matt Smith? Who knows? Maybe.
Maybe there's more chance of it, and I think maybe, you know, I reckon. I mean, I don't want to see him going anywhere for a considerable period of time.
But no, not at all.
Capaldi, I 100% think he would do Big Finish in the future.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, well, but moving on to more surprise appearances by David Tennant and Catherine Tate.
That was beautiful. What a beautiful segue. Well done. Congratulations.
This is we've just had the broadcast of the girl who died and the woman who lived. What did you think of it?
I really, really liked The Woman Who Lived.
Yes.
I came away from that going, wow, that was, it was quite different, you know, in terms of what we've had recently. I think I was having this discussion with, you know, friend of the show, Richie, on Twitter, where he sort of said, it was a bit weird. It felt like a Big Finish. And I was like, well, do you think that's maybe because there was a real focus on dialogue and the script, and the actual sort of alien threat and sort of big spectacle was really just put on the back foot? Mm-hmm. It wasn't an important thing. It was all about the dialogue and all of this sort of character piece about being the Doctor and what the people that the Doctor leaves behind and all this kind of thing, and what that may mean for the rest of the series. It's quite a refreshing thing to do, to kind of sort of take the foot off the gas a little bit halfway through the series and kind of go,
yeah,
where is this going? And I really, really enjoyed it. It was really different, just great performances by Capaldi and Maisie Williams. It was quite nice to see the 12th Doctor with somebody else and interacting with somebody else and on his own.
Yeah, I have to say, I didn't miss her. It was nice to see her at the end, but I didn't miss her.
That's down to the strength of the story, I think, more than the fact that, you know, we want her gone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But we don't say it like that, because we don't.
But I really enjoyed The Woman Who Lived without any real reservations. The Girl Who Died, I'm still unsure of. I laughed. It was funny.
Yeah.
It was certainly, I mean, because there was a lot of people already were sharpening their pitchforks and lighting their torches when they, like, had read the reviews. It's a bit more, you know, similar in tone to Robot of Sherwood. So yeah. What? Why is that a bad thing? Why is that this attitude that people have that Doctor Who should be dark and scary and horrifying every week? It's nonsense. It's utter, utter nonsense. That's never been the case. There's always been a lightness of touch. There's always been humour there. You know, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I also enjoyed the respite of the kind of the lighter, greener, funnier episodes after two fairly bleak, very cold colours, cold landscapes, cold palettes in terms of the way the episodes were shot. This seemed very rich, seemed very colourful. It was far funny. I mean, I absolutely loved. Okay, we're going to start using real swords now. Cut to village in utter chaos.
Yes.
Shit burning in the background and just people running and screaming everywhere. That was so funny. And then the Doctor just like channeling Hartnell, just sitting in the midst of it all, just like, oh, the task. Oh. Yeah, I loved it. But I do know what you mean. I mean, when we went to see The Magician's Apprentice cinema showing in Edinburgh, Stephen Moffat did say that this series, it was going to be two-parters, but it was also going to be linked stories, things that kind of join on from the last episode. And really kind of challenge the idea of what a two-parter is. And this is very much that. It was we don't so much have a two-part story. We have a story and then we follow the character into another story, essentially.
We see the consequences of that, of what happened there, but in a completely different setting, a bit further on. So much so, actually, that I don't know what it was about. It was maybe just what the story was about, that I kind of half expected this twist to come near the end, that this story was actually, The Woman Who Lived was taking place after the end of the series, sure, and after Clara had gone.
Yeah.
But obviously that was not to be, and you know, we get her back at the end. But there was just this kind of this sense of this sort of ominous tone to everything.
Yeah.
In terms of the Doctor's companions and the people that the Doctor has, whose lives he has an effect on. That I was like, oh, maybe it's gonna end up, but it was, yeah, it's good, it's good.
Yeah,
but I mean, there was some really good jokes in there as well.
Yeah, yes, absolutely, yeah. I was just gonna say, I think that's the thing I found most effective about this story, is that it's the introduction of Maisie Williams. Presumably she's going to be back again. That's what it seemed to be setting up towards.
Yes, seems to be.
She's going to be back again. But it's also on a cliffhanger in that what she's had, the conversation her and the Doctor have at the end of the episode when they're in the inn, is so loaded that you really don't know if she means to be his friend or not. Mm-hmm. And outwardly, it seems like she is his friend, and she's kind of swearing to protect the people that he leaves behind, or who leave him behind. But just the fact that in the TARDIS at the end, when the Doctor clocks her at the back of that picture of Clara and the kid, there's just a real kind of horror on the Doctor's face, like he doesn't quite know what's going on.
Yeah.
And that we as an audience should be, all right, okay, that's... That's setting something up very, very interesting.
I mean, obviously, I'm trying to keep as spoiler free as possible with this series, but I did feel watching this two linked episodes, whatever you want to call it, that this at the heart of what this story is about, you know, like the Doctor deciding that, you know, well, which we'll discuss in a minute, I'm sure, in more detail, that his face is to kind of remind him that he, you know, his actions have consequences and that he can always save people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the laws of time be damned, if he can save someone, he's going to save somebody.
Yeah.
Is that, and also the sort of the consequences of sort of leaving people behind, does that tie into Clara's leaving? Does that, and I just, my head started, I was like, oh no, I need to kind of go back. But I think this middle section of the series is very much teeing up where we're going to be at the end, yeah. I think. But I may be wrong, like, you know, it's hard to second guess Stephen Moffat.
Well, it's hard to first guess him.
Well, that's true, yeah. But I think this is a very important story in terms of where the series is heading.
But okay, let's look at the episodes in more depth, because you are right, there is something unsatisfying about that first part. And I wonder if it's... And I've thought long and hard about this, and maybe we can kick this around a bit.
Okay.
The main problem I think that I... Because I loved it. I loved the comic element of it. I loved the... I loved the mire. I loved Odin. And I loved the villagers. The various actors playing the villagers. Mm. There was something really Asterix-y,
yeah,
about it.
Really,
and I love Asterix the Gaul. There was something really funny about it. The problem I have with it is that, and this is kind of like when you're doing any kind of like dramatic writing, one of the first things you have to ask if something is going to happen is why now? And I guess my thing about this episode is, why does the Doctor now, at this point in his life, get sick of people dying so that he takes the actions that he does? Because he's 2,000 years old, there's been a pretty high body count before this point. But what we seem to see in this episode is that a fairly... Okay, he's obviously built a relationship with a shielder, but she doesn't really seem to do anything or instill anything in us as an audience that if we were in the Doctor's position, we would decide at that point to shake the laws of time and bring somebody back to life. I don't quite get why now he takes that action. And I think that thought maybe affects my enjoyment of the rest of the episode. And I don't know if that's because of the scripting of it, or, though I do like Maisie Williams in this, I sometimes don't think she gives a strong enough performance for us to think that she is unique enough to be saved in that episode,
yeah,
or in the following episode, someone who seems like they've lived through utter torment and hell through 800 years. She doesn't She doesn't really seem like a kind of ageless, broken-hearted person in the way that, say, Matt Smith, who was of a comparable age, could easily channel, you know, a universe-weary soul. Sorry, that was very long-winded.
No. You raised some very good points there. I mean, I think she's a lot better in the second part. But I do get what you're saying, that maybe she doesn't quite nail that kind of... Because the whole thing is that essentially what she is she's the 12th Doctor before this, in the last series. You know,
yeah,
that
yeah.
whole line about, you know, oh, you know, you don't want to care anymore, but then really annoyingly you still care, and that kind of,
yeah. And I guess maybe that's where it does fall down, because I don't see her performance, the performance that she gives, as a mirror for Capaldi's 12th Doctor.
Okay, yeah.
And obviously he's a stonking actor, yeah, you know, it's going to take a lot to keep up with him. Yeah. But that's what it is. It's supposed to be that he's supposed to be looking back on himself, or looking back on just, you know, like the ideal of or the idea of that he has, I suppose,
yeah.
of being the Doctor in his middle age. But you don't get that. Like, for instance, there's a scene, you know, when she's talking about fighting at Agincourt,
uh-huh.
and she's got this dialogue about her that it takes 10,000 hours to be good at something, 100,000 and you're the best. And, you know, I was firing bows and you know, like, you know, she was really obviously a crack shot. She was excellent.
Yeah.
But what we get, or her dressed in a kind of English war helmet, wistfully looking around. We never get a sense of her being exceptional at anything for us to believe that she is indeed exceptional. She just seems like the same fairly... She seems like maybe a couple of years has passed from us seeing her in the first episode, but nowhere near 800 and nowhere near 800 years worth of excellence trailing behind her.
Perhaps. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily a script problem. I think that's perhaps or even a performance problem. I think that's just maybe more in how the battle scenes are directed, or maybe and you know, there's not like a little scene in there where we go. We should probably have her show that she's a great warrior.
So yeah, so they show her getting out of a river because she's able to hold her breath, and we see her sneaking out of a coffin.
Yeah, yeah.
But we don't see her being a great warrior. We briefly see her being mournful of her children who die in the plague.
Which is because I've read some reviews, which I disagree with, but I've read some reviews that sort of say, oh, it's totally all over the place, blah, 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 blah. You know, a historical romp doesn't fit with this kind of, this mournful sort of character study. I disagree. I think, you know, it... Doctor Who is a show that has always tried to do all of these kind of grown-up themes, but knockabout humour and sort of scary monsters and all this kind of thing. And I think this one does it well. But that is quite a... When that sort of scene comes in, where she's got the three empty cots, I was like, bloody hell.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is that scene that does... It is the saving grace of this thing that I'm talking about, which is you do get a sense of her as somebody who's suffered the passage of time within that, where you don't within the other things that are described in her past and the performance that you largely see in the episode.
And maybe that's the point. Maybe the point is that you don't necessarily need to prove to the audience that she's a great warrior. What you need to prove to them is that she's suffered great loss.
Sure, but I don't really get a sense of it. I like it. It's a very watchable performance, but I don't really get a sense of it. And so as a result, I just don't understand why the Doctor saved her life for any other reason than at this point in the story he had to save her life. Other than maybe, talks about premonition. He said it's just remembering in the wrong order. There is the possibility that what he did was born out of panic. He knows the sort of person he seems to be creating in Clara, and he knows where it may lead, i.e. some danger to her, maybe her death, and he begins to panic, and he's kind of like working out ways that maybe he can go about saving Clara. This is an experiment in that direction, you know.
Well, possibly. That's what I'm kind of thinking as to where the series is going, that maybe, you know, this kind of, not so much the Time Lord victorious anymore, but, you know, it's a similar thing to sort of Waters of Mars, is that maybe this will be her undoing and his undoing, is that he will go too far to save her and something terrible will happen at the end of the series. But, I mean, coming back to, you know, why does he save her, why does he save a shielder and all that kind of thing, I think it purely and simply comes down to the fact that, and then the first, well, actually, I've only actually watched this once, but just after watching it, I felt a bit flat because I felt that although the Maiar are this and Odin are this great terrible threat to the village and to potentially the rest of the world, and they save them in this kind of, you know, like the Doctor being his most, I guess, manipulative and kind of this the magician, yeah. I guess, essentially is kind of what we're looking at, and tricking them into this in almost this sort of comedy fashion at the end, that I didn't feel her death was justified. But then maybe that's the point. Maybe that he goes, well, you know, that, there's that whole line where Clara says, you know, well, you know, we've won the war or whatever it is. And he goes, oh, you know, I don't mind losing wars. You know, I'll lose any war any day. I think that's the point, is that her death is so unjustified and that, you know, he's so up and he's like, yeah, I've saved the village and nobody died except for this one person that rankles with him because he's the Doctor and he saves people and, you know... I think it's more to do with that than the fact that she's some sort of exceptional person that he needs to save. It's that death wasn't justified, and actually he's fed mm-hmm. up of these fixed points in time where he goes, well, you know, fair enough, it wasn't justified, but that's life. This time he goes, do you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go for it. I'm going to save her.
Yeah, but I don't know. I just, from a character point of view, I just don't think we find the Doctor in that position in that episode. So it seems tacked on. It seems functional because it has to happen.
It does seem tacked on. I do agree. It did.
For the revelation clunky. Of finding out what his face signifies, it was kind of just a throwaway. Unless they're going to build on it and do something towards the end of the series with it.
I'm glad it was though, because you know, I'm on record as saying that, you know, I don't really give a shit. It's that they went, here, should we cast that really good actor, yeah. Peter Capaldi, who's always wanted to be the Doctor? Yeah, let's do that. It's nothing
sure,
to do.
Sure, and I mean, I'm
happy with that. So I'm happy with the explanation. Yeah. I was like, yeah, fine.
And cool, I'm happy that the explanation was essentially the one that I'd come up with, which was pretty good. I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to seem like I'm kicking into this episode, because I'm not. Like, of the 100% of it, about 80% I really loved, really enjoyed, and there's maybe just a bit that I don't know if Maisie Williams was the person who should have played this role or could have played this role effectively. You know, I don't quite get that she provided the character that justified the Doctor's actions at that point in his life, or that gave a good mirror to the character of the 12th Doctor that we kind of find in this series at this moment. Yeah. You know,
I kind of agree with you in a way, but I have to say I think I, by the sounds of things, enjoyed The Woman Who Lived a lot. Well, not maybe not a lot more, but enjoyed it more than perhaps.
No, that's. I mean, these are just little sticking points I had, because I don't want to be like, I don't want to be one of these fans that refuses to enjoy it because he's hung up on like the sound the sound when they open the door of the TARDIS sounds different from all the other episodes. So I'm gonna throw myself in front of a truck, like I don't.
If only they would.
So I don't want to be like that, because there was a lot to enjoy. Like, I absolutely fucking loved Rufus Hound in this.
He was great. He was really great. Yeah, I very much enjoyed him. Is that the first full on knob gag in Doctor Who? I feel like it can't be. I feel like there must have been knob gags in Doctor Who before.
No, this was the most. This was the most overt that I think we've ever had. Some people were calling that an innuendo. There's nothing innuendo. Like, there was some overt stuff going on over here. But I loved that scene. I absolutely loved that scene. Because, I mean, Rufus Hound was able to really channel someone who was absolutely desperate not to die. So he was resorting to doing some crowd work.
Yeah.
As a comedian, I can relate to... can absolutely relate to his performance. And I thought him and Capaldi had such synergy as well.
Absolutely. But again, that's another quite nice mirror to the Doctor as well, though, isn't it? You know, the person that doesn't want to die, so will play for time by doing crowd work. That's what the Doctor does. You know, faced with a deadly threat, he'll tell jokes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think he's one of the best guest performances. Well, you know, when Doctor Who magazine come out with their season survey, I hope he bags something for his performance, because it was really good. And in terms of the first part, we had the Maiar, I'd love to see the Meyer back.
Yeah, they were good. I like the idea of them.
Yeah. Genuinely terrifying when they take their helmet off.
It's a horrible, disgusting horrible thing. It's kind of like the inside of a muscle, but with all these kind of horrible eyes and this kind of blue, terrible. It's disgusting.
Yeah. And I forgot his name now. The lion guy.
I almost said, "Oh, Lion-O," but that's not right.
The guy from Delta Leonis. I can't remember the planet. I can't remember the character's name. I thought he was great because the mask, it wasn't just like an actor in like an immovable bit of headgear.
No, it properly kind of.
Yeah, it had a great fluency and it seemed really well crafted to the skin, so it looked like a living being.
Yeah, definitely, which helps so much. And, you know, I think that's one of the new series things. Fair enough, we've discussed in the past how, you know, sometimes the monsters aren't all that memorable. But, you know, you can't fault them for the fact that, and we had this with Davros at the start of the series, is that those masks now are getting so much better at kind of conveying emotion, movement and all this kind of thing. So that it doesn't feel like just a guy in a mask, it feels like a living thing.
Yeah, I mean, I know it would be, I know it would be prohibitive to have a new companion
who was has a lion some
kind
man.
Of who is not necessarily a lion man, but with some kind of alien mask on him or her.
Yeah,
you know, because like as fans, we all are well aware of how much work and effort and hours in the day it takes to make a series of Doctor Who. So whoever signs up.
Oh, I thought you were going
to
make a reference to Chameleon there. It's like we all know how awkward it can be.
No, but we all know what a weight, an effort, and just a chore it would be if someone signed up to be a companion and then have to like get loads and loads of latex on their face every day, every shot. It would be prohibitive. But I don't know. I just maybe like a guest couple of episodes having someone who's a bit less than human as a companion in the TARDIS would seem fun. And judging by the work that's been done on the series so far, it would look pretty realistic, I think. Look pretty interesting, pretty believable you could buy into it.
It's certainly worth saying, now that we're at the halfway point, hasn't this been a fantastic series of Doctor Who so far?
It's been like exceptional.
It's always good, you know, blah, 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 etc., etc. But this has just been, I've loved every minute of it so far.
The two-parter system, I think, we've had it for a decade now, more than a decade. I think Doctor Who when you were talking about this with the Big Finish thing, like the classic Doctors doing 45-minute episodes on Big Finish didn't really work. I think that classic Doctor Who, with its kind of 4x25-minute episodes, that's for that. Two-parters are the way to go for modern Doctor Who, because this series has been excellent, but it has also been the most intellectually stimulating, textured, dramatic, just characterful series I think that we've had.
Because there's been time for the stories that, you know, that they're wanting to tell to breathe.
Yeah.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's...
Yeah, exactly. And there's been, I mean, it's a shame that they only did it the once after The Magician's Apprentice and The Witch's Familiar, doing the omnibus. But I've been doing it myself anyway, which is that you have the two episodes and then on the Sunday or that following week, having an omnibus viewing of the two-parter that I've just had. And I think maybe one of the reasons that I have had a problem with the girl who died is that it was the first episode that didn't really function or didn't really seem as satisfying on its own, because all the previous episodes had been a great addition, a great part of a two-parter, but they'd also been very enjoyable, very satisfying on their own. And The Girl Who Died was the first time maybe that was a bit of a problem, where you kind of felt like, I'll get everything, I suppose, out of the second part. But that's more a compliment to the other episodes, which is that they have very effectively worked as, 45 minutes of entertainment and drama to themselves. But they also work well as a component part of a larger story. You know, this is an incredibly stupidly long way of just going, yes, Mark, you were right. This has been an excellent series of Doctor Who.
And I think that's going to continue next week. I mean, this Zygon two-parter the sort of early, the early word sounds amazing.
Well, I mean, I absolutely love the Zygons. So I'm really looking forward to this. I also like the, I also like what UNIT are doing these days.
Yeah, definitely. And I broke my rule. I did watch the Next Time trailer, and I was like, man, this looks good.
Yeah.
This looks really good.
It's also interesting that we're going to be watching this round about the same time that we're going to be talking about, for our next proper podcast, the Suntaran Stratagem in the Poison Sky. It looks like there's going to be a bit of crossover.
Yes, because it does look like a proper similarities. Big UNIT story, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And a proper Pertwee-era-style political allegory as well, by the sounds of things.
Yeah.
About terrorism and immigration and all this kind of thing. So, yeah, very, very interested to see this one on Saturday.
Yeah. So, there we are. Doctor Who's great, but anybody who's watched it will know that. Yeah.
Thumbs up.
Let's leave it there. That's it. We enjoyed it. It had a couple of problems, but largely it was good. That to come across.
Absolutely.
I just felt there was some stuff that was worth teasing out.
No, these two stories. They're not perfect. By no stretch of the imagination. But I came out of The Woman Who Lived, and I was like, man, that was really good.
That sounds like such a weird statement.
I came out of The Woman Who Lived.
Came out of The Woman Who Lived. Like, oh, what a criminal you sound like.
It could have been worse. I could have come out of The Woman That Died. The girl that died.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to record that again.
This has just lost
better.
Us a lot of listeners. all right, man. Well, yeah, okay, so...
Right. Yeah, necrophilia jokes aside.
Yeah, that's exactly where we're leaving it. So obviously, 2 weeks' time, we've got the Zygon stories. We'll talk about that. In the meantime, we'll have another.
Yeah,
Doctor Who.
We're going to record one of those at some point soon, hopefully. If you're following just these, I can't imagine why you would. We'll be back with the Zygons, but if the usual on the timeless run, we'll be back with the Poison Sky, the Suntaran Stratagem, and the Invasion. So a big UNIT episode.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Which is good.
Just in time for our next UNIT outing with the Zygons.
Indeed. Never trust somebody who says they don't enjoy the UNIT stories. That's what I always say.
Okay. More on that next time. All right, man. Well, I'm saying cheerio to you, but listeners as well, cheerio. I've been Ben. Thank you very much for joining us.
I've been Mark. Thanks for listening once again. And take care. Enjoy the rest of the series.